Mini episode 376 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 376. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with you. We've got a discussion that we're going to be doing today that is going to be an analysis of the 2014 Baseball Hall of Fame voting and who got in, who didn't get in, and some of the factors behind that and the state of the Hall of Fame going forward. For the purposes of this discussion, we have with us an FDH Lounge dignitary who is also a talk show host on the Sports Talk Network and an occasional presence on WFAN in New York, SNY in New York, and some other outlets, and someone who is himself a practicing attorney and able to speak on these matters, who has also been an activist in terms of youth sports and ethics in sports, our friend Steve Callis. Again, FDH Lounge dignitary joining us. Steve, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
Everything's good, Rick. Great to be with you as always.
Well, let's jump right into it. The Hall of Fame voting for this year, the three managers that made it, not probably going to be the focus of our discussion, but three of the greatest managers of all time making it, Bobby Cox, Tony La Russa, and Joe Torre. It's the players that have drawn, obviously, the bulk of the attention, who made it, who didn't make it. We can get to some of the other guys with the non-controversial reasons, relatively speaking, later on, like Jack Morris. I mean, whether or not you think that what he did in the 1980s merited that is less controversial, actually, than the whole steroid thing here, which kind of hangs over this class. We have seen established that if you are documented in any way to have been on steroids, performance-enhancing drugs, anything like that, et cetera, in the case of Mark McGwire, some of these other guys, you are not going to make it. Barry Bonds, where there is everything but the smoking gun that is there in his case, you're not going to make it. What seems to be most interesting to people right about now is the next level down in terms of that, the suspicion. Folks like Mike Piazza with the back knee that was documented by Murray Chass some years ago. Jeff Bagwell, where there is at least some smoke, but apparently not any fire that is there in terms of steroids yet. I've got my thoughts on that, but what are your thoughts on players who have the strong suspicion hanging over them, but nothing that is ever linked to them in terms of actual reporting?
Well, I think this is the problem now with the present-day Hall of Fame in general and these players in particular. You know, I would make a case, and we'll do it some other time, of course, that Bonds, before he ever took a steroid, because he's the one guy where it's well documented when he did take, right after the 98 season when McGwire and Sosa went wild, I think I could make a case that he should be a Hall of Famer. If he had dropped dead after the 98 season, I think he would have been a Hall of Famer. But you're right. Those guys right now have no chance, and I don't think any kind of veterans committee or expansion era committee or whatever they call it now, Rick, 15 years from now, I don't think these guys are ever going to get in either. But I always thought that Bonds was in a little different category. As for these guys, the suspicion guys, you know, it's the old, how do you prove a negative? How do I prove I didn't do steroids? You're Mike Piazza. There have always been some rumors, some suspicions. To me, if you look at his Dodger numbers, they were much more impressive, of course, than his Met numbers, even though he was a great Met. Could he have been doing them for that long? Because his Dodger numbers were video game numbers. So I feel bad for Piazza. It's kind of painting everyone with that broad brush, Rick. You know, it's interesting, and we'll talk about Frank Thomas at one point. Frank Thomas, frankly, was a gigantic man who always escaped any kind of notion that he had done anything, which is pretty interesting. Not because he did do anything, just because a guy like Piazza, a guy like Bagwell, rumors, yes, yet nothing about Thomas, and you would wonder why a gigantic man like Frank Thomas never had that criticism. And it's interesting because he had some interesting comments to say, like, of course, he doesn't believe cheaters should go into the Hall of Fame. And I know we won't take it this broadly, Rick, but when someone like Frank Thomas, now a new Hall of Famer, says we shouldn't let cheaters into the Hall of Fame, my next question would be, well, what about Gaylord Perry? So I know we don't want to go down that road.
Yeah.
But Gaylord Perry, who admitted throwing a spitball for years and is in the Hall of Fame,
true.
When Perry criticized Bonds, I thought that was hysterical. But you're right. As for these guys, I think you're going to have to wait and see what they get next year, because if you're going down, as we're seeing with guys like McGuire and Sosa, even Bonds and Clemens, if you're going down, it's very unlikely you're ever going to go back up. So I think next year is really the deciding time for a guy like a Mike Piazza.
Well, again, I was always a fan of both Piazza and Bagwell when they were players, and I generally liked them personally as well as on the field. But again, I find myself in a lot of instances deferring to the folks who were closer to the situation. And it's very popular to bash the sports writers for doing the whole guilty until proven innocent thing. But again, whether it be back knee, whether it be other things like that, Bagwell copped at one point to using Andro, which,
right.
Again, that was a beard for Mark McGuire for a long time. I was
right.
saying it back when it was only the tinfoil hat people that were saying, you know, maybe McGuire just said he took Andro as a smokescreen from what he was really doing. So you've got players that, again, wouldn't point the finger at anybody else, wouldn't do anything like that. Conversely with Frank Thomas, yeah, I've wondered the same thing. He's a big boy. Everyone has always just assumed that he was drug-free. I don't know. And I guess that's my point on a lot of this is, I don't know. I think it's the people who are in the locker rooms all the time who probably would know and would have a better idea, even if they were keeping it to themselves at the time. Another name that you could throw out there, and not to start smearing everybody, but if we're going to just say this, you know, somebody that was always assumed to be clean, Ken Griffey Jr. Well, you break down a lot when you're on steroids. That's a guy that broke down a lot. So it's very interesting. But again, maybe the fact that he hasn't been linked to it, the people who are closer to the situation probably, again, know better than you and I. It's a very complicated thing. I find myself being one of the few people who is prepared to defer to a lot of these sports writers and the people that were in the locker rooms at the time.
I don't disagree with that. I think what's going to happen, and I don't know when it's going to happen, but at some point, one of these guys who did do steroids is going to get in. I don't know that he's in already. I can't say this is the problem, the new problem, frankly, the 21st century problem of not only the Hall of Fame, but of baseball. You know, I know we don't want to go into a lot of Biogenesis and A-Rod, but the reality is none of those guys failed the test. You know, A-Rod's big defense is he didn't fail a test. None of the Biogenesis guys failed the test. So how do we know there aren't other Biogenesis labs in baseball right now? The answer is we don't know. And, you know, frankly, I don't think they would have found out about Biogenesis unless they had that employee, the disgruntled employee with the document. So I understand Bud Selig is trying to save his legacy. I don't think he can. I understand he's trying to clean up the sport, and he says, look at our great drug program. But it's almost like hypocritical because, on the one hand, we have the greatest drug program in the world. On the other, we didn't catch any of these guys doing drugs. None of them failed the test. We had to go out and get
right.
proof of other things. That's when the famous non-analytical positive has come into play in the last, literally the last 2 years or so. And all these guys who took their 50 games, obviously you heard the criticism of Johnny Peralta. He does steroids and he gets a 4-year, $52 million contract from the St. Louis Cardinals of all organizations, Rick. So
right.
I know we don't really want to go down that road as well, but I think what's going to happen, the end game here, someday, sometime, is going to be one or two or three or five of these guys are going to sneak through, and then it's going to become public knowledge. And then, frankly, the Hall of Fame is going to take more hits than it's already taking. And you're right. I think these writers are taking guilty till proven innocent in people like Piazza, for example. He's probably the best example. And can you keep the greatest hitting catcher out on a suspicion? You know, if you read, I just said Bonds, you know, I can make a case for him as a Hall of Famer, but if you read Game of Shadows, there's little doubt that he did steroids. Clemens, frankly, the same kind of thing. I kind of believe McNamee. And even though Clemens was acquitted, who really believes him? You know, and when you go to other sports, Marion Jones, Lance Armstrong, people can look you right in the eye now. They're experts at looking you in the eye. I didn't. Bill Clinton, deny. It's all part of the same thing, Rick. And that's what I think we're seeing with some of these players, including, frankly, A-Rod. You know, Andy Pettitte's another example in 4 years because he's retired. You know, he admitted doing it twice, HGH, and he's a borderline Hall of Famer. I don't know that he's a Hall of Famer, but that's got to hurt him. So, yeah, I think the baseball writers have to be careful because their problem, and I don't have a vote, but their problem is if we let in the wrong guy, it can't really be reversed unless they do some kind of new rule. You know, so suppose a guy gets in, and 3 years later he admits to doing steroids, and all the proof comes out against him. Do they have the ability to take him out? Not to my knowledge. I don't think they do. So that'll be another interesting thing. Will they eventually have the right to take people out of the Hall of Fame? And that might be a solution, but I haven't heard any talk of that.
No, that doesn't appear to be on the horizon anywhere. And again, 20 years ago, this came up in the NFL. The fact that there's still an Orenthal James bust in Canton shows you that offing two people allegedly is not going to be enough to get you out of a Hall of Fame. So that precedent, even though in another sport, has kind of been set of where once you're in for what you did on the field, you are in. And you're right that we really don't want to go down this rat hole too much because, again, outside of the Eastern Seaboard there where you're at, Steve, this steroids thing is pretty passe. It doesn't really cause a lot of fear to spill at the old proverbial VFW Hall in Steubenville. But in terms of how it stacks up in baseball versus these other sports, it is very interesting in that baseball is now establishing in the last couple of years, they are different than the other Hall of Fames now in the sense that you can't point to any equivalent figures in any other, what I'll still refer to as the big four sports in this country, basketball Hall of Fame, hockey, and football. You've got guys that, you can argue on the merits whether or not some of them should be in there, but there are no slam dunk candidates in other sports that are not in the Hall of Fame. Baseball now has a couple of them because strictly on what was done on the field, Bonds and Clemens, neither of whom I like at all, but I would have to admit, first ballot Hall of Famers, if we leave all this other stuff aside. Then you start getting to Piazza, Bagwell, other guys that would be gimmies, McGuire even. It's a little more arguable with probably McGuire as well. So what does that say about where baseball's at versus these other sports? And is there any kind of an argument in the non-ethical way where you're just saying that in terms of just in the creative sense, basically, of having the best players in, that baseball now is suffering a loss that other sports don't suffer?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And there are some people who have called for, who cares, let them all in. But obviously the writers have, and that was really, 3, 4, 5 years ago, the writers have really spoken now. These guys are not even close to getting in. And I include Bonds and Clemens, who were in the 30s this year and last year, and I believe both of them actually went down a little bit. So, again, if you're going the wrong way, see, that's why I thought a guy like Jack Morris might get in. We could talk about him later. But he was going up consistently. I think he just got buried by, frankly, Glavine and Maddox. But if your numbers are going down, and they are going down for these guys, all of them, I think you're going to have a problem. That's why I say with Piazza, to me, next year is the big year for Piazza, because if he goes, he had 62.2% this year, and if he goes down to 55 or 57, he's going the wrong way. Now, if he goes up, generally the arc is if you go up, you're going up. But vis-a-vis the other Halls of Fame, yeah, I think baseball has lost something, but I don't agree. And again, I don't have a great solution other than to study as hard as you can study, but I don't agree that you should just open the floodgates and let everybody in from this era. I can't buy that, because that might include McGuire or Sosa. Look, Palmeiro, whatever you think of him, 500 home runs and 3,000 hits are the two greatest numbers in the history of baseball, and he was over both of them, and he's now off the ballot. Do you know that, Rick? He went under 5% this year, so he's automatically off the ballot. I even saw a quote from Palmeiro. He goes, I wasn't hoping for a miracle. I didn't think I could get in, but I also didn't think I would get knocked off. And he will not be on the ballot next year because he got 4.4% this year. And once you do that, as under 5, you're off. So he's off. And I don't think he's ever going to get any consideration from anywhere. I'll just give you the Clemens numbers just so you know. Clemens in 2013 got 37.6%. You need 75, so that's about halfway there. In 2014, 35.4%, so he went down over 2%. Bonds, 36.2 in 2013. 34.7 this year. So the two guys who you, I think, could at least argue, assuming Clemens didn't do steroids till he went to Toronto, remember Duquette traded him and said he was washed up at 30? Well, he might have been right. But did he have a Hall of Fame career as a Red Sox? I think the answer is maybe. Did Bonds have a Hall of Fame career before 99? I think the answer without question is yes. But those guys aren't even halfway home, so forget all the other guys. They have no chance.
Well, one quick follow-up on what you said there, and one final one on the steroid subject, because, again, the steroids in baseball at this point in time, it's not even beating a dead horse. It's already just an indistinguishable mass of pulp and blood and fur at this point. But as far as it goes with what you said about the argument of, well, there's a case to be made, a lot of them cheated, what's the harm, blah, blah, blah. The one thing I will say, because I don't hear anybody else saying it is, on the matter of what does it matter on that, it's not nearly a thing. People want to be like, oh, with baseball, people are snobs about their records and the purity of the game and all that. It's not so much that. If you are turning a blind eye to steroids as baseball did for so long, then what you're doing is you're forcing the players that are in the game to, if they want to be able to keep up, to not just cheat themselves, but in all likelihood to take years off their life. Because these are very dangerous substances we're talking about here, steroids, HGH. All you have to do is look at the world of pro wrestling since about the 1980s, which a lot of people have said is kind of the canary in the coal mine for this. Just people dropping dead left and right, and the performance-enhancing drugs in many cases having a great amount to do with that. So you're going to see baseball players dropping dead. It's not a pleasant thing to say, but it's true. You're going to see that a lot in the next 10, 20 years, the guys that were doing this. You do not want to have a sport where you're basically mandating to the players, do this stuff, kill yourselves early, or risk getting washed out of baseball, or at the very least, not being all you can be against the cheaters.
No, I think that's a great point. And we've already seen it kind of at least in the reaction to A-Rod with the suing of the Players Association, where they actually wanted to kick him out of the Players Association and then were told by the lawyers that, you know, you literally cannot kick a guy out of the union. You just can't do it. He's in the major leagues. He's in the union. So there's been a big negative effect. There were tweets, I think, about the Johnny Peralta contract. Thanks, owners, for, you know, encouraging us to still cheat, which, you know, I think is a very telling point from a couple of clean ball players, frankly. So, yeah, I do think it is a problem. You can make a case. Look, I agree with you. These guys are going to drop dead. I think the analogy to wrestling is, frankly, a good one. I don't know the amounts. I don't know that the wrestlers took more. But I think, yeah, that's true. I'm not sure about the whole thing with Ken Caminiti, you know, when he died young. I just don't know if it's already crept in a little bit. Could be people we don't know about, things we haven't heard. You know, you've heard the stories of some guys who were borderline players who took steroids to make the major leagues. Now, this isn't just for superstars. We just don't know, but I think you're right, and that's going to be a 10, 20, 30-year, you know, something you'll see in obituary 12 or 14 years from now, and will they try and cover up the reason for the death? You know, what will it say on the death certificate? We're just not going to know, but, yeah, it's a very dangerous thing, and I think players for, you know, at least 15 years, back to the Bash Brothers in 88, 89, have really at some point in their careers, like in the Oakland A's clubhouse back then, have to make a decision, am I going to do this or not? And then you have the additional, well, these guys are getting rewarded with gazillion-dollar contracts. I mean, tens of millions of dollars, literally. And is it worth the risk? You know, the old, you think you're invincible when you're 20, 25, 30. Is it worth the risk? I can provide for my family. I don't think it's going to hurt me. So, yeah, you're right. There are a lot of intermingling things there. And we won't have the answers for, as you said, 10, 20, 30 years down the road.
That's true. And there will be some people that will be dropping dead of things that are connected to this that, again, may raise some eyebrows if they are people that the public may not associate with performance-enhancing drugs. And that's always the possibility in that may come as a little bit of a surprise in that way, and something may come to light. There was an awful lot that came to light, not in the way of performance-enhancing drugs, but other issues after Kirby Puckett passed away. But speaking of which, his one-time teammate, Jack Morris, that's somebody that we discussed previously briefly, from the 91 Twins, the world championship team. And again, if you're looking at a Hall of Fame case to be made there. That game 7 of the 91 World Series, which, by the way, was voted as the greatest World Series of all time in the FDH Lounge Pantheon in some of our more recent voting here. That is what kind of cemented Jack Morris as the ultimate big game pitcher of his era or his time, or one of the very best at that point anyways. Again, leading the major leagues in wins in the 1980s. He is sort of a case here. He got 61.5% of the vote this time around, dropping 6.2%. So his chances appear to be going down as well. He is another one of these guys where, you know, the stats guys will look at him one way and the stats guys will kind of dismiss him out of hand. And I don't even say that disparagingly because I understand where the stats guys are coming at from a lot of the time. The people who, again, to sort of eschew going in that direction a little bit more and just like to focus on the big games and some of the other numbers that kind of support their point of view. Those are the people that think that Jack Morris is a Hall of Famer. So he's probably the most interesting non-steroid figure at the moment as far as the is he worthy or is he not debate.
Yeah, I feel bad for Jack Morris because I thought he was climbing that ladder and frankly got overrun by Glavine and Maddux this year. It was just bad luck for him. If they had even one of those two guys not eligible, I think Morris would have got over the hump. The other argument you're hearing now is, you know, they're only allowed to vote for 10 guys, and they're saying they should be allowed to vote for more. I don't necessarily agree with that, because if you can't get on the list of 10, it strikes me that shouldn't give you the extra, in the example of Biggio this year, the extra 2 votes that he needed, or even what Jack Morris needed. But I'm a big Jack Morris fan. I remember watching that game, maybe the clutchest game we've seen, certainly since the 90s, in the last 25 years or so. It was just a stunning performance, a gutty guy. And I'll give you a stat that I found today, Rick, that I'd never heard before, and I think it is a telling stat, frankly, and here it is. Jack Morris is the only pitcher in the history of baseball to strike out more than 2,000 hitters and never strike out a pitcher. How about that?
Wow. Well, that's very interesting, yeah, because his career was spent, of course, in the American League. It was before the advent of interleague play. And, again, that must have meant that in that World Series he did not have opportunity to strike out a pitcher. Well, I assume that that's a record that
I think it's regular season he struck out.
Okay.
'Cause the numbers they give you, as you know, for win loss et cetera, do not include your, you know, postseason record.
Yes.
It's always separate. So he was 254 and 186 as a pitcher over 18 years, and he struck out 2,478 guys. Now, 3,000 strikeouts is not the magic number that 300 wins is or 3,000 hits is, but you'd have to think in 18 years, he might be able to strike out like whatever it is he'd need, like 25 guys a year if he had faced pitchers in all these games, which he never did. So I find that interesting, and we've also discussed in the past, and I think this is relevant to guys who are coming up like Mike Mussina, guys like that, 300 wins was generally based on pitchers who pitched in a 4-man rotation, so they pitched every fourth day. By definition, those top starters got 40 or 41 starts every year. Nowadays, and including when Jack Morris pitched, because I see that Jack Morris usually started 35, 34, 36 games, once 37, in the 5-man rotation, Rick, by definition, you're not starting 40 or 41 times. So to me, that took away 15%. This is just straight math now. This has nothing to do with relievers or anything else. If you're starting 15% less of a time than the pitcher, say, in the 60s or 50s or 40s, then to me, just mathematically, I've written articles about this, 300 wins is really 255, which is 15% less, and Jack Morris had 254. So I would say that he's the equivalent of a 298 or 299 game winner who pitched in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. And I think you have to look at him. That's why I think Mussina should be a Hall of Famer as well. He's up next year. I assume maybe we'll mention a few guys who are up next year. He had 270 wins, and that's well over 300 if you believe what I believe, which is 255 today is the equivalent of 300 wins.
Interesting.
There's a lot here.
That is all things being equal in terms of, you know, you might have a little bit more strain if you're going once every 4 days. You might break down a little bit more. So
that's
kind of all things being equal as far as the conversion chart there. But Craig Biggio being at 74.8%, very close. I don't know that there have been that many times in the history of baseball somebody's been that close and not made it eventually. So it does seem to be pretty much an inevitability. He gained 6.6% from where he was the first time on the ballot in 2013. It's very interesting because while Jack Morris has suffered by being the bane of the stats guys, Biggio has benefited from the work done on his behalf. First and foremost, I would say probably Bill James and highlighting him and highlighting the things that he did and sort of the hidden value that some of these advanced statistics can really uncover. And when you look at the value that he brought to those Houston teams that were so great over a period of time. Also with Jeff Bagwell, who we've already touched on. Of the two, again, it looks grim for Bagwell. It looks like Biggio is going to get it at some point. I would say probably even next year. If you gain 6.6% and you're only 0.2% short, at that pace, he'll be well over it next year, of course.
Yeah, I will give you a couple of interesting ones on being that close. Biggio, who got 74.8% of the vote, there were two other players who got 74.8% of the vote. One was Nellie Fox, one was Pye Traynor. Now, they both eventually got into the Hall of Fame, but Nellie Fox got in via the Veterans Committee. So even though he was that close in a vote, he did not get in on the regular vote, if you will. So I find that interesting. The other thing is, and maybe you can speak to this better than I could, I always viewed Biggio and Bagwell as kind of a package. And is it true then that there were rumors about Biggio, but not about Bagwell, but not about Biggio? Is that part of the difference as well, or is it just kind of Bill James got behind him better?
No, I think that there. I've seen a few things recently, but no real informed chatter. More so, probably just because everybody that is on the ballot is suffering that kind of scrutiny now. But I've not seen Biggio getting it more than anybody else has, largely because, again, it goes back to what we were saying about before, body type. And Bagwell and being, you know, your prototypical first base slugger and the way that he kind of filled out in his prime years versus Biggio never really had the physique that was going to turn any heads in a negative way and say, oh, well, look at that muscle-headed at second base doing what he's doing. So that's probably the main reason for that. Biggio is going to have to contend next year with a class that does have some people that will be very, very heavily favored, all things considered, to make it on the first ballot. In this climate, of course, and again, as we've seen with Roger Clemens, certainly the power pitchers have come under scrutiny, and it'll be interesting to see if the Bagwell slash Piazza precedent is extended to, say, for example, Randy Johnson and Pedro Martinez. They're going to be on the ballot for the first time next year. All things considered, you'd expect them to be slam dunk first-timers. Gary Sheffield, is he a first ballot guy with or without, if we leave aside any questions about him for a moment? I think it's borderline whether or not he's a first ballot candidate, but he's a guy that, again, all things considered, would certainly make it in at some point. John Smoltz could very well be a first ballot candidate, as was the case with everybody else, all things being equal, because you don't know really who is going to suffer the scrutiny case by case here, because there's a lot of things that really kind of emerge only once guys are on the ballot. The thing with Bagwell, again, whatever whispers there are that are out there, and that's what you have to basically call them at this point, because nobody's ever had anything on the record about them. It didn't really emerge until the time came for voting on them for the Hall of Fame. So for these guys, a year out, we can look at their chances in a vacuum and assess it, but until we wait and see like what kind of whispers start accompanying their names, we won't really know what their chances are.
Yeah, I don't really think Sheffield's getting in for an, especially first ballot. I agree there is a bit of a difference, even though someone will give you the argument, well, he didn't get any better since then. Why shouldn't he be first ballot as opposed to second or third? But Sheffield, I remember admitting, I think it was on an HBO thing, you know, he said, oh, steroids. Steroids is when you inject yourself. I never did that. And I think essentially he admitted taking, you know, the cream and the clear and rubbing them in.
Yeah.
I think there was that interview with, I believe it was Andrea Kramer, I want to say. But I think that's going to hurt him. And I'm not sure he is, even if he was viewed to be totally clean, I don't think that he's getting in, certainly not next year. I think Smoltz is getting in because you have to figure, I know he didn't get 300 wins like Maddux and Glavine, but he did have those years as a closer as well. I think Smoltz gets in. Pedro Martinez, to me, if I had to pick one guy in the last 30 years, I've told my young son, if I've seen one guy who I thought dominated, like Koufax dominated, and I'm old enough to have seen Koufax when I was a very little kid. You know, when people came to see the Mets, when the Mets were the worst team in baseball, they didn't come to see the Mets. They came to see the National League because there was a return to baseball after the Dodgers and Giants had left. So people came to see Koufax and Drysdale, Mays and McCovey, Clemente, you know, guys like that. It really wasn't about seeing the Mets. So I think, to me, in my opinion, Pedro Martinez at his best is the best pitcher of the last 30 or 40 years at his best. He didn't put up the numbers everybody else did in terms of wins. You know, he's 219 and 100. And I always thought he should have retired before he got that 100th loss, because for years he had just, you know, the differential was even more stunning. But to me, Pedro Martinez is the first ballot Hall of Famer. I think Randy Johnson is the first ballot Hall of Famer. 300 wins. The pitchers have not been hit as hard, in my opinion, as the hitters in terms of steroids, belief, even though Clemens kind of hurt the pitching fraternity because most people think he did steroids. And Johnson does have the magic number. Now, you know, maybe you'll say to me, well, Clemens has the magic number too, and he's not getting in. But Johnson never had the trials and tribulations that Roger Clemens had. He also had one of the greatest World Series ever, you'll recall, in 2001. He won Game 2, won Game 6, and then won Game 7 in relief. He shared the he shared the MVP with Schilling, but I thought Johnson was the MVP. He won 2 and 6 and then came out of the bullpen a la Grover Cleveland Alexander and won that World Series, that wild, fantastic, I'm a Yankee fan and say it was still arguably the greatest World Series ever played. So I think there are guys who are going to take votes away from other guys who are coming up on the ballot next year, but I don't think Gary Sheffield is one of them. I think it's kind of a pitcher-heavy class next year for the first time. Now, again, Biggio and Piazza, obviously not pitchers. We'll have to see if their numbers go up. If Biggio's numbers go up, he's in. And if Piazza's numbers go up, he's close to getting in. And I think the only reason Jack Morris got hurt is it was his 15th year of eligibility. I think if he, you know, if he had moved everything up a year, that he would have got in last year. But I think he, again, he got overrun by two great pitchers this year.
Yes, and that is, of course, right about Gary Sheffield. I had forgotten about that momentarily. But, yeah, clear in the cream. He's already copped to that. So you can pretty much file him away with Bonds, Clemens, and everybody else. But, again, if we've graduated to step two of where it's basically just strong suspicions of guys or moderate-sized suspicions or whatever the case may be, anybody on the record is pretty much good as dead. So Sheffield should not be posing for his Cooperstown bust anytime soon. Because, yeah, you are right about that. But all things being equal, yeah, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, John Smoltz should be part of the 2015 class, along with Craig Biggio, as close as he is right now. We'll have to see how that goes and check out the baseball season, of course, that will intervene between now and the 2015 voting. And, of course, we'll be talking about that with you at various points along the way. Thanks for joining us tonight, Steve.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Rick. Look forward to doing it again.
All right, thank you all for tuning in, everybody, for FDH Lounge mini episode number 376.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.